Some
fired.
Shelter, just to explain where I got from, so I'm sorry
but
to
it's, and Shelter know full well the sequencing approach that we're taking forward. But I should say, Nick, AWAB's law is not the only thing we're doing. So we're consulting on a revised decent home standard for both social and private rented sector homes this year. We're introducing, for example, electrical safety checks for social landlords, a requirement, competence and conduct standards for staff in social housing. So alongside, and I think it's just the main point I'd like to stress is, alongside boosting housing supply, alongside delivering that biggest increase in social and affordable house building in a generation, this government and me and the Deputy Prime Minister are absolutely committed to driving a transformational and lasting change in the quality and safety of homes of all tenures.
Let's finish with another of your senior colleagues, Ed Miliband, and the news that landlords will be able to pass on the cost of upgrading energy efficiency of rental properties to tenants, these net zero rules overseen by your colleague, Ed Miliband. Are you comfortable with that, tenants having to pay this?
Well, we do want to see landlords increase the energy efficiency of their properties.
Are the tenants to pay consulted. For it, Mr. Pennycook?
Well, what I'd say on that, I don't sort of recognise the way that's been framed. What I would say is that the Renters' Rights Bill that we've introduced, that is going through Parliament at this moment, it's in the Lords, it's coming back to the Commons hopefully soon, includes very clear protections that allow renters to challenge unreasonable rent increases via the first-tier tribunal. So protections are in place, and it wouldn't be appropriate or allowed if a landlord hiked rents by 300-400% on the basis that they had to undertake vital energy efficiency upgrades that we need to see happen. Again, relating back to the previous case, energy efficient homes are decent homes, and we've got to ensure that both in the social sector, but also, and in some ways more importantly, in the private rented sector, where non-decency rates are far higher, we do expect landlords to step up and improve their properties.
Grateful for your time. Housing Minister Matthew Pennycook explaining how SME builders are going to be getting back on track to hit those targets, those ambitious targets. Thank you for your time, Minister. It's 1 minute after eight. LBC News headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Akram had been living in a London flat deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. An inquest will take place in August. Akram's father, Abdushafi, says the flat was dangerous for his family.
The mould helped to kill my son. Under the condition of the house, when it's raining, the water coming from inside. Damp, it smell strong like the air. The air is not fresh.
Notting Hill Genesis, which manages the property, says it's deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. It says it's working with relevant authorities as they conduct investigations, and it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest. A man is still being held on suspicion of attempted murder after Liverpool's trophy parade on Monday. Merseyside police believe the car, which hit dozens of pedestrians, was able to follow an ambulance into the restricted area. The former Liverpool manager, Jurgen Klopp, spoke at an awards ceremony last night. He said the incident puts the game into perspective.
It just showed the two phases of life, the most beautiful phase for a long, long time. The parade was incredible, the mood was incredible, and from one second to the other, everything changed because we then learned again, and there are more serious things in the world than football.
Energy companies are to pay out more than £70 million over the forced prepayment meter scandal. It follows a review into the way some suppliers changed the tariffs of vulnerable customers who fell behind on their bills. Affected customers will be eligible for payments starting at £40 and rising to £1,000 each. London's Mayor says Sadiq Khan has backed a review calling for some cannabis possession to be decriminalised. He says there is a compelling, evidence-based case to change the rules for people who have small quantities of the drug. The Home Office says it has no intention of reclassifying cannabis. Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million in the largest penalty ever imposed by the regulator off Watt. About £105 million relates to wastewater regulations and the rest for breaking rules on dividend payments to shareholders. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 87.78. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 19. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most. It'll feel quite warm in the sunshine, a high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
The Škoda SUV showcase event is now on, featuring the Škoda Kamiq, Karoq and Kodiaq. Three confident SUVs, all crammed with character, created with commitment. Carefully crafted for curbs, the country and carrying kids to karate. And now with £500 off Kamiq and £1,000 off Karoq and Kodiaq. Come quickly to a Škoda retailer between the 19th of May and the 9th of June for a closer look. Customers saving including VAT applied to on-the-road price on retail invoice. Retail customers only. Offer cannot be claimed retrospectively. T's and C's apply. Participating retailers only.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 5 minutes after eight, Wednesday, May the 28th. Up and away. Congestion charge now to go to £18. I'll remind you what year it came in and how much it cost. Not that long ago, in reality. In other news, back to the story I was covering with the housing minister there, this LBC exclusive, the tragic death of that child, the reforms that are on the way, and, of course, the action that should be taken by landlords. We'll give you that story a little bit later in this hour. In other news, decriminalise possession of cannabis. You'll get a hearing from the former leading politician, Charlie, now Lord Faulkner, who's putting that forward. Not everyone's on side. Peter Reynolds is from the campaign group Clear.
The violent criminal gangs that are selling cannabis no longer have to worry about the fact that their people they're selling it to aren't going to be criminalised. And, in fact, it could make the whole situation worse.
Plus, later in the show...
West Dulwich residents became the first in the country to defeat the council over a low-traffic neighbourhood. But what could that mean for other LTNs? I'm LBC's Henry Riley with the details.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Even though I've been in this job for a while, occasionally stories still hit me. I still get a phone call to be told news and it almost makes your jaw drop. And that was when I told the congestion charge will go up again. This because we have to tackle the fact that London is so congested. What do they not work out? The reason we are so congested is that so much road space has been taken away from motor vehicles. In many of the main bridges now that cross the River Thames in London, if you live or work in London or you come to this great city, it is just one lane for all vehicular traffic as it is. An entire lane is devoted to bicycles. Now, of course, we want bicycles to be safe. Obviously, we do. But the reason you can't get over the bridge at many times of the day is because all the traffic is sitting there stewing and belching out fumes. This congestion charge, by the way, introduced, and hands up anybody who remembers, it was £5 in 2003. It is now to go up by 20% to £18 in the congestion zone during certain times of the day. Now, the proposals City Hall wants to make plain are subject to public consultation. When has ever public consultation gone against a way that would raise more money for local authorities, or indeed for central government, for that matter? Can you ever remember that happened? No, nor me. A charge will be increased each year in line with tube fares. Tube fares for 2025 were increased by 4.6%. At present, the congestion charge goes up from £15 to £17.50 if not paid by the third day after travel. That's probably enough of all of that. And this comes at the same time as work done by the RAC shows that London now is the fifth most congested city in the world. Obviously, we stormed to the top of the table in Europe, ahead of Paris in second and Dublin in third. But when it comes to the most congested cities, and I've been to four of them, Istanbul is the unenviably at number one, New York City at two, Chicago's at three, Mexico City, the one I've not been to, is at four, and there's London in fifth place, worse than cities such as Jakarta and Cape Town. Michael Dunes is head of transport policy at the consultancy firm Stonehaven, former head of Future Roads Technology at the Department of Transport, and joins me now. Can you explain to my listeners the rationale of taking road space away from vehicular traffic? Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, so City Hall's had a long-standing policy of trying to support what it calls sustainable transport. So trying to go and get people onto buses, tubes and active travel like cycling and walking. And it has a target for where it wants to try and hit in the future of about 80% of transport in London being by those methods. And the congestion charge is one of the tools it uses to try and shift people over from away from the private car into modes like that.
Do you think anyone driving a private car in London now is doing it for any other reason than he or she have to. No one does it for pleasure.
Certainly in the centre, I have to agree, it does seem like the congestion charge has very much done its job of cutting congestion down. There are very few people in there now who are driving a private car who aren't exempted for some reason, like having a blue badge.
What will the impact of this potential rise... What would it be hoped the impact of this rise would be?
Well, City Hall wanted to try and shift how people are choosing to travel.
But they've already have to Greenwood. Mr Dunas. If you're going to go... You've gone now, haven't you? Mm. All this is... If you were really serious, it would be £1,000. Either you don't want pollution, or you do.
Well, that perhaps is maybe the other big story within all of this. It's not just that the congestion charge is going up, it's also who's paying it as well. One of the big changes that's happening here is that the people who currently benefit from the cleaner vehicle discount for electric vehicles are going to see most of that go away at the end of this year. So it's going to go from being a 100% discount for electric vehicles down to about 25% for private hire vehicles, for Ubers, minicabs, 50% for vans, and nothing at all for ordinary drivers. So it's going to be quite a big shift away from electric vehicles and towards vehicles that currently don't pay. They currently do pay the full charge.
No, absolutely. Are you supportive of that?
Well, we did some research into how well that cleaner vehicle discount is working, and I've got to say, I was amazed at how effective it's been at changing London's road fleet away from diesel and petrol towards electric. They tightened up the rules back in 2021, and for those private hire vehicles, so the minicabs, your Ubers and so on, it went from 5% electric at the start of the year to 25% electric 12 months later. Now, I'm a transport historian by background, and you don't get change like that. That's really, really spectacularly powerful, shifting over how people are travelling in London. And it has knock-on effects for the whole of the centre, so for the whole of London as well. So 93% of the benefits in terms of green miles, which were driven by electric vehicles, were outside of the congestion charge zone and in the inner and outer London. People didn't know that the congestion charge was doing this, but actually it's been merrily working away trying to green our fleet. And unfortunately, we're going to be switching it all off for Christmas time, which seems like a bit of a potential own goal.
So you're a little bit opposed to that, I sense, Mr. Dunas.
It seems like it's fantastically good luck for City Hall to have developed a tool that works like this.
Lastly, surely the congestion charge is the wrong name, because if I'm in an electric vehicle, I'm still taking up road space, so I'm still contributing to congestion, aren't I?
Yes, well, and that would be City Hall's rationale for reducing the discount on electric vehicles. We would be... they would be saying that you need to go and think for the future, and that most vehicles will be electric, and that someday you'll need to go and switch off the discounts that exist. But at the same time, it's still doing hard work today to go and get people over to electric vehicles, and that job isn't anywhere near done yet.
And do you happen to live or work in London?
Just on the very edge. I think I'm in the borderlands.
On the border. So you don't go through the city very regularly?
I don't think in 20 years living in London I've ever paid the congestion charge once, because I've never been through the city in that way.
But you might have seen the amount of traffic. I don't know whether you're on a bicycle or you use buses or whatever, or you walk. The amount of traffic on some of our roads is extraordinary now, levels I've never seen before.
Yes, well, I once upon a time I wrote a book about plans to build motorways in London to try and fix that problem. And I think, although there's some very bold plans for how they were going to go and carve London up again, people were probably more comfortable dealing with the traffic than they were with the motorways that could have taken them away. I don't think anyone's gone back to revisit that decision since.
Grateful for your time, Michael Dunas, your head of transport policy at the consultancy firm Stonehaven. Thank you for that. Even if you visit London occasionally, you will know that. And I've lived and worked in around London almost all of my working life, a few years off for good behaviour in other countries. There's nothing like it now. It is just with a heavy heart. And the idea, no one is driving in London for pleasure. And, of course, the dynamics have changed as well. There's so many, I'm going to call them white vans, they can be grey vans, they can be blue vans, they can be whatever colour you like, delivering packages in and around London. And we're all now stuck in one lane. David's in Hampstead. Your reaction to this news from yesterday. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Great show. You know, this is just another excuse. It's a 20% increase, by the way. People, over more than 20%. It's 20%. Sorry, yeah. Sorry, it's bad maths.
That's all right.
Anyway, it's just a big increase, and all this is, it's another excuse from Sadiq Khan to really squeeze more money out of motorists. And like you've mentioned, roads are like closed more than ever. And if you notice, they're digging up roads left, right, and centre.
No one's there.
When you go to other countries, I'll tell you, you go to other countries and stuff is done quickly. If a road's dug up, it's quickly finished, sorted. Here, you're looking at weeks and months. And you know what's really funny? Sadiq Khan, Mr. Championing of Equality and everything, all he's doing here, he's just punishing the poor people. If you've got a bit of money in your pocket, what, you think £3 additional is going to stop you driving? Mm. It's not going to stop you driving. And it's just, he does this again and again, and he dresses it up as something else, whereas, you know, in reality, you have, you know, rooms full of consultants like, you know, bless him, the last guy you had on. I can imagine exactly what he does in his spare time reading books about motorways.
Well, that's fair
and,
enough. That's
you know,
we
it's,
need folk like that.
We do, but I just think that people are postulating and strategizing based on books. And like the guy himself said, he's not going through London regularly. He doesn't understand how it works.
How do you think? What would you say, lastly, to the people who plot and plan in the side rooms?
I would say the first thing you need to do before you can even suggest there's actual congestion is, as you've alluded to, number one, you need to make sure the roads flow more regularly.
Yep.
And what that means is, and I would do this very simply, as far as the Mayor of London, when you pay out your contracts to the companies that are digging up the roads, repairing, etc., I'd say, how long is it going to take? They say 2 weeks. I say, sure, okay, cool, here's the money. If it takes longer every single day, there's a £20,000 fine. Get it done on time, or get it done quicker, keep the money it would have taken you to do it in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Do it. And
I like that reasoning or the rationale. David, thank you. I have to move on for time reasons. If you bought an electric vehicle, by the way, you currently, of course, travel free. You don't pay. Now, I think the best you're going to get is a 25% discount, 25% off. So do you feel you've been conned into going electric? I'll take a view on that. Also, that story coming up after the news.
The parents of a baby boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe mould in their flat contributed to his death. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with the exclusive.
Those stories and more follow the 8:16 LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
The parents of a boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Police are still questioning a suspect over the collision at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade on Monday, and Thames Water has been fined a record £120 million following two investigations by the regulator. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 29 at the A127 to 30 at the A13. It's all down to an accident where two lanes are closed. And then also on the M25, there are lengthy delays clockwise from junction 8 at Reigate to 10 at the A3. And that was after an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. Also, the problems on the trains do continue. No Gatwick Express. The entire line is suspended. Also, as a result of that signal failure, the southern services aren't running between London Bridge and East Croydon via Peckham Rye. London Overground's Windrush line is suspended between Highbury and Islington and West Croydon and also up to Clapham Junction, and that's because of an ongoing investigation.
This is LBC.
Have you ever wondered what becoming a lotto millionaire sounds like?
You want to sit down? I can confirm that you have won £1 million indeed.
That's Terry finding out he'd won £1 million.
Yes, oh my God.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Will you be the next millionaire? Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver, and Daddy helped me make it.
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
The Steakhouse Stack, with two layers of delicious beef, crispy onions and peppercorn sauce. It's the kind of McDonald's you take photos of to put pride of place on the mantelpiece. Sure, you'll need to make room, but you remember what your wedding day looked like? The Steakhouse Stack. It's McDonald's, and then some. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Subject to availability, participating restaurants only.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. My Claim Group is working hard to help. So, even if you've forgotten your details, make sure you check. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple. When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics.
with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
What you're saying about the lift in congestion charge. Mark says it's another kick in you-know-where for carpenters, plumbers and sparkies who work in London. Keith Oliver also says another attack by Sadiq Khan on the motorists, a disgrace. Ask him to sit in a London taxi all day and see what his road scheme has done to ruining this great city. Well, of course, this comes as the RAC releases figures now that London is the worst now, the fifth worst or most congested city in the on the entire planet for traffic. Now, if you've been fortunate enough to travel through parts of Asia, as I have, countries, or cities, I should say, sorry, such as Bangkok and others and Singapore, and the congestion you see there, I haven't been to Manila, but I understand that's pretty tough. That's quite something that London is in fifth place, obviously the worst in Europe. And what don't they get? This damn congestion tax has been around for more than 20 years, launched under former Mayor Ken Livingstone in 2003, and it cost £5. If it was working, do you not get it? If it was working, we wouldn't have the congestion that we have. And the congestion that we have obviously means that we are now number five in the world. So this is that theory, isn't it? What does it keep banging your head against the wall, expecting it to be different? It's not going to change. The more you take road space away from vehicular traffic, i.e. buses, taxis, cars, white vans, whatever it might be, and give it to cycle lanes that are often only used in peak time, it is so frustrating to sit in those roads. No one going up the cycle lanes. And often bicycles, by the way. How frustrating, again, going over London bridges. A bicycle decides not to use a cycle lane. Why? Why aren't they immediately arrested and the bicycle thrown in the water, in the river? That'll make them think twice. Anyway, we'll come to that and more on that in a moment. Well, let's take one call, actually, Amanda, because we've got quite a few. Amanda's in Acton. Amanda, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
Well, I'm relieved because I don't have to drive in London that often. But when I do, I just find it an incredibly unpleasant experience, remarkably unpleasant.
It's unpleasant. It is utter misery. Mm. And my main point is, what is all this 20 miles an hour? It's ridiculous. But Euston Road, 20 miles an hour.
That's absurd. That's
it's absurd.
Yes, it is.
I understand it in the back roads.
Yep, by schools. And let's always say that. Yep.
Always say that. And I live in Acton. I walk to work. We run a business, events going in and out of town. And for our guys, it is chaos and misery.
Yep.
And my whole point is, you know, where is just joy in life these days?
Well, they've found a way to take money out of your purse or your pocket or your wallet. That is the truth of the matter, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. I get fined for 21 miles an hour. We all laugh. Our local industrial unit round here in Acton, we go along Horn Lane, 20 miles an hour, and we do 22 because we're just... It's so hard to drive at 20 miles an hour, I'll be honest with you. You have to keep looking at your speedometer. Mm-hmm. That's when you're likely to have an accident. And then you get pulled over or, get a ticket.
And have you noticed in your part of London, I'm not that familiar with Acton, so much road space now has gone the way of bicycles or whatever it might be. So you all
Yes, that's my other thing. Funny in the lockdown, they couldn't have PPE, but they managed to get all those ghastly poles that mark out the cycling road. Mm. Where were those stored? That's my point. They came out at the drop of a hat.
They did.
They went everywhere. The Kew Road, have you been along there? There's no cyclists. There's about two a day.
You mean the Kew Road by Kew Gardens?
By Kew Gardens.
Yes.
I'm not saying we want to whiz along there.
I know that road really well. I don't know. It used to be able to park by the side of the gardens.
Oh,
now it's all cycle lanes.
You can't park anywhere.
No.
Can't park anywhere. There's no... Oh, don't. I can't wait to leave.
Where are you going?
Do you know, I think I'm going to go to Sunbury.
Oh, I thought you were going to leave the car. Okay.
No,
why Sunbury?
You like the river? Not yet.
You like
because
the river?
Because I think they treat you a little bit like a proper adult with common sense.
All right. Look after yourself. Safe driving, safe cycling if you cycle, safe time in Sunbury. And we'll pick up on this. Now, let's get to this story that we have mentioned a number of occasions. It's very powerful. There's some distressing listening coming up. It concerns the parents of a baby boy who's died aged just 15 weeks after living in a flat in London deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. And the parents have now told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. The inquest for baby Akram will take place in August. Notting Hill Genesis, that's the housing association which manage the property, say they are working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations. I warn you again, there is some distressing listening here. LBC's reporter Helen Hoddenott has the exclusive report.
Hello.
A mum trying to distract her baby as he struggles with his breathing. Akram was born on the 8th of November last year. His mum, Ayat's third child.
He was a playful, good baby. He was very playful. When he was months old, he started to laugh with me. And even we used to listen to music together. We had a song that we always listened to together.
Home for the Mohammeds, a family of five originally from Sudan, was this one-bed flat in Hampstead. A broken tap runs water, the smell of damp hangs in the air, and there's mould coating the walls and their belongings. An independent survey carried out when Akram was a month old concluded Notting Hill Genesis was failing in its duty to ensure the property was fit for human habitation.
Mould and damp, and behind here as well, mould and damp.
For months, Savas Panas from the Pillion Trust, which helps disadvantaged people, worked with Akram's dad, Abdeshafi, to raise the alarm, claiming the conditions were affecting the family's health.
We sent the reports, everything that I could get and everything that Abdeshafi could find for me, we forwarded on to say, we're not playing a game. This is dangerous. This is serious. Please, please, please. Prioritise this family.
Notting Hill Genesis say they carried out a thorough mould wash in September last year, but 3 months later, the survey found mould in every room. In February, Akram's mum took him to the GP with breathing problems, but they were sent home, told he would probably grow out of it. In the early hours of the next morning, he became unresponsive. His parents rushed him to A&E.
They tried to do the CPR, they tried to do this sort of thing. Medical terms that I never heard about, and it was so scary. Eventually they stopped doing what they're doing, and they said, okay, we can't do them anymore because he's dead, your son is dead. Actually I didn't believe them. I didn't understand. No, he'll be okay, he'll be okay, please can you try again.
Baby Akram died aged 15 weeks. The results of a pathology report shared with LBC by the family's solicitor found he had late-onset Group B strep, which resulted in acute pneumonia. Experts tell us it's not caused by mould, but say poor living conditions can, in some cases, lower a baby's immune system, making them more susceptible to acute infection. And while full answers from the inquest are pending, Akram's dad tells LBC he believes the condition of their home contributed to his death.
The mould helped to kill my son. Under the condition of the house, when it's raining, the water coming from inside. Damp, you smell strong like The air is not fresh.
Akram's family is calling on the government to urgently implement Awab's law, which will force social landlords to address issues quickly. It's named after Awab Ishak, a Sudanese two-year-old who died in Rochdale in 2020 from breathing problems caused by extensive mould in his home. In February, the same month Akram died, the government announced a delay to fully implementing the law until 2027.
I'm Deborah Garvey and I'm policy manager at Shelter. We are disappointed that it's going to take so long to implement. If there are delays, then that can represent a real danger to the health and safety of tenants.
Notting Hill Genesis say they're deeply saddened by the tragic loss of Akram. They say they're working with the relevant authorities as they conduct their investigations and that no determination has been made by the coroner as to the cause of his death. The government says Akram's case is a devastating tragedy, but that it would be inappropriate to comment further ahead of the inquest.
Helen Hodder not reporting. Now, let's pick up on an aspect of Helen's report there, the idea of this legislation that was brought in the views on Shelter, the organisation, something I put to Housing and Planning Minister Matthew Pennycook when he was with me in the previous hour, and asked him, Awab's law, named after Awab Ishak, tragically, of course, another baby of Sudanese origin who comes to supposedly one of the most powerful economies in the world in London and loses their lives. Is it really being delayed until 2027?
Let me just say on the case, it was absolutely devastating, heartbreaking tragedy. Everyone deserves to live in a decent, safe, secure an affordable home. That is the government's mission. That underpins all of the reforms we're making on house building. I understand why you've raised the case. I understand why listeners will want more details. It would be inappropriate for me to comment on it until we have the coroner's final report.
But I understood but in terms February, of, social landlords were given a two-year grace period, Minister, to the heart of
no,
my
that's,
question.
No, that's not true.
Go ahead.
What we have done with in terms of Awab's law, which is a law, as you say, which came out of the untimely death of Awab Ishak, from respiratory failure as a result of dampened mould in his Rochdale home. Mm-hmm. And that tragedy is an absolute stain on the nation, and we can never let it happen again. We must take action to do this. What we talk about in terms of introducing Awab's law is taking a phased approach to ensure that social landlords can introduce it in a way that doesn't harm tenants. If social landlords fell over and all of their repair systems were put over, that wouldn't be good for tenants. People will see, though, we're laying the regulations soon. Awab's law will apply to emergency hazards and dampened mould from October this year.
Oh.
In terms of 2027, that's when every hazard encompassed by Awab's law.
So it's the gravity of the hazard we're talking about. This is the key here, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think it would be understandable, we are targeting the most severe hazards in the first phase, if you like. And the way we are introducing this will actually allow us to apply Awab's law to dampen mould earlier than would otherwise have been the case by ensuring it comes in October as a standard. So we are taking action.
I'm sorry if I alongside, got that from Shelter, just to explain where I got no, that from. So I'm sorry
but
to
it's, and Shelter know full well the sequencing approach that we're taking forward. But I should say, Nick, Awab's law is not the only thing we're doing. So we're consulting on a revised decent home standard for both social and private rented sector homes this year. We're introducing, for example, electrical safety checks for social landlords, a requirement, competence and conduct standards for staff in social housing. So alongside, and I think it's just the main point I'd like to stress is, alongside boosting housing supply, alongside delivering that biggest increase in social and affordable house building in a generation, this government and me and the Deputy Prime Minister are absolutely committed to driving a transformational and lasting change in the quality and safety of homes of all tenures.
Housing Minister Matthew Pennycook responding to that LBC exclusive. Coming up after news, we stay with housing matters. Are you a tenant? Well, get ready for the landlord to charge you more as part of the government's plan for net zero, championed by Ed Miliband. The costs could be passed on to you. And we'll have more on that after this. It's 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, and LBC News Time, Thomas Watts.
The parents of a boy who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. Akram had been living in a flat in London deemed uninhabitable by an independent survey. Notting Hill Genesis, which managed the property, says it's working with relevant authorities ahead of the inquest in August. A driver is still in custody after he was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder at Liverpool's Premier League trophy parade. Merseyside police believe the car which hit pedestrians was able to follow an ambulance into the restricted area. Police and security chiefs are calling for extra resources to respond to prison reforms in England and Wales. They've written to the Ministry of Justice to warn of a threat to public safety by releasing some inmates after a third of their sentence. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places, feeling quite warm in the sunshine, a high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
Amazon offers employees up to £8,000 for education and training, like Juliet. She's now a trained technician, and to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £8,000 for education and training at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
It's your home, darling. Let's make it fabulous. High scoring isn't my forte, but there's no arguing with Trustpilot ratings. Shutterly Fabulous have an expert team of fitters who specialise in one thing, simply gorgeous window shutters. Made to measure, hand finished and expertly installed. Make your home Shutterly Fabulous. So don't dither, darling. Book a free consultation with our expert shutter fitters today.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing investment platform, IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible incredible rate. Visit ig.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34, just to reference back to that disturbing report, we're not going to let go of that story. Obviously, we'll bring you updates as and when that inquest takes place. Potentially, of course, it's going to be just as devastating as that awful story that we heard, we mentioned in Rochdale. But Lee, move on now. Move on by looking back to a conversation we had at the top of the hour, which is this 20% increase in the congestion charge. This, as it is confirmed, London is the most congested city in the whole of Europe and the fifth most congested in the whole of the world. And I was just thinking, actually, during the news break there, I'm very fortunate, having been a journalist and covered stories all around the world and literally been thrown on aircraft for virtually no minutes ago to go and chase someone, some kind of story, whatever it might be, landing in cities such as Delhi and elsewhere. The congestion that you see is quite incredible. And the fact that we absolutely beat that actually surprises me, not for a second. Because if you are unfortunate enough to have to come into London as part of your work and you get stuck in traffic, it is incredible. And to the point that was made by an earlier caller, the number of roadworks now is incredible as well. Grace is in High Wycombe. Grace, your reaction to this story? Because you live outside in High Wycombe, don't you? Good morning.
So actually, I'm the other way around. I live in the congestion zone, and at the moment, I commute out to High Wycombe every morning,
right?
Which is easier than it sounds, just sort of along the city road, which becomes the M40.
Right, okay, so you're a sort of reverse commuter, for want of a better expression.
Yes, I'm part of quite a small minority, I'm assuming.
But you still pay, because you keep your car inside the congestion zone, is that right?
Yes. So initially when I moved to London, I was working at a studio in Windsor and I was leaving before the congestion charge kicked in and coming home after that. And now my hours have changed. So I come home at about three. So it costs me about £1.50 because I have this 90% discount.
90% discount. I'm sorry. Is that because of where you live or because of the vehicle that you run?
Because of where I live. So right. I live just inside the congestion zone.
And I'm sorry, is that going to change or you will retain that 90% discount?
I believe it's going up to just a 25% discount, if what I heard earlier was correct.
So you're going to lose 65% of the discount, am I right? Yes, that's right, you're going to lose 65% of your discount.
Well, yes, but I think when that kicks in January, I'm going to be a student, so I won't have as much need for my car.
Okay. Can I ask what you're going to be studying?
I'm going to be studying fine art at Central St. Martin's.
Good luck with that. With a view to what? Do you think you're going to do? Are you going to lecture in art? Are you going to do it? Are you going to write books about it? What are you going to do?
About what, my degree or my
art? No, art. What will you use once you've studied art?
I actually want to become possibly a gallery technician or look into the movement of art across the world, so private buyers and galleries and stuff.
How long is the course?
It's a three-year undergraduate course.
Okay. And what have you... I don't want to know the company, but what do you do up in High Wycombe? Why do you drive up there?
At the moment, so I used to work in film, doing film contracts. As you know, that work can be a bit sporadic. So right now, I work in manufacturing with my dad in a factory.
Okay. Lastly, you sound, and I'm sure you are, a young person, so you're probably going to be more green-minded than perhaps some folk. Are you in support of congestion charges and pricing of this fashion?
I mean, ultimately, I am. When I passed my test, and I grew up in Slough, so I said, oh, I'd never drive in London, and I've ended up doing it every day, and... I mean, when I finish work at three, it's not a long commute, but it is just very frustrating. And ultimately, I prefer to take public transport.
And it works for you, the public transport? The connections are close to your home and everything?
So right now, I live sort of close to the Elizabeth Line and the Northern Line. So that would be fine when I'm a student, and also to go home to my parents in Slough is very easy. It's just for... starting work at 6 a.m. in a little village just away from High Wycombe, I need that car right now. But I know I'm an outlier, really.
Good luck with your studies, Grace. Safe travelling. I hope the studies go well. 3 years fly by and you're jetting around. You won't be commuting to and from High Wycombe. You're in the Elizabeth Line. You'll be zipping around some of the great art capitals of the world. I don't know, Paris, Rome, wherever else, Madrid, wherever else you may go. Good luck to you. Thank you. It's 8:38. Now, we're talking a lot about housing. So what is this story that landlords will be able to pass on the cost of upgrading energy efficiency of rental properties to tenants? These are the net zero rules overseen by Ed Miliband, the energy minister, requiring all rental properties to meet a minimum energy performance certificate. They're known as EPCs. If you're buying or renting a house. You'll see the grading or the rating there. They need to be at C by 2030. Now, I take you back to February when I asked Ed Miliband whether these targets would mean higher rents for tenants and if the government would provide additional support for landlords. This has been picked up all the way back in February in the newspapers today. This was Mr. Miliband's response.
There is some government help, yes, and we're looking at what more we can do. There are some local grants, there's the boiler upgrade scheme, so there is help available to landlords. But when this was done before with a less exacting standard, we didn't see rent increases, we saw actually landlords step up, and as I say, half of landlords already do this.
Well, what will the reality be now? Chris Norris is Campaigns and Policy Director at the National Residential Landlords Association. Joins me now. Thanks for your time, Mr. Norris. What do you think the impact could be? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think we inevitably will see some of those costs passed on. I mean, Mr. Miliband is correct insofar as we didn't see a direct increase in rents last time around when we moved from having no standard, particularly no minimum standard, that is, moving to what was then an EPC-E. I think the devil is in the detail, though. And for most landlords to get to that E, they had to insulate their lofts. They maybe had to install some cavity wall insulation. The cost was relatively low. I think this time around, if we're moving to, well, we're calling it an EPC-C, but actually we don't know what the standard will be yet because the government is still consulting on that. It may be called C, but it'll be a very different standard. We expect the cost to be in the thousands of pounds for upgrading those properties. So, yes, there will inevitably be some, you know, pass-through of the costs. I don't think, though, we're going to see some of the figures that are being reported overnight. I mean, I think we've got to view this in the context of landlords amortising these costs over a number of years. But inevitably, you know, the people living in these properties, the people who are, you know, my members' customers, will face some of the cost of this policy, yes.
You mentioned things such as cavity wall and the loft work to get you to an E. What sort of things would get you... I hear what you say, we don't fully know what a C is, but from what we do know about C now, how would you get from an E to a C? What sort of work might you be looking at?
Well, about 70% of properties are already a C or better. You have to bear that in mind. If you're in, let's say, a typical Victorian terrace, you've probably got what's called single skin walls. They're just brickwork walls. There's no cavity between them. So to get up to a much higher standard, the kind of standard we're assuming, you probably need to have those walls insulated. Now, to do that, you either slap kind of Sellotex or Kingspan insulating foam on the outside or the inside of those properties, and you clad the whole building. That's when the work starts to get really expensive. And if you are talking about a typical Victorian terrace or Victorian semi, you could be looking about £20,000 to do that work. You'll probably then want to tie that into something like an air source heat pump to reduce the ongoing cost of heating that property. Now, how much does one of those cost? How long is a piece of string? It depends on the property, depends on the extra work you've got to do. But I think a landlord could very reasonably be facing £25,000 to £30,000 worth of work if they had currently an E-graded property to get to a good mid-C.
And yet I hear there are now an exodus of some landlords from this profession because they're finding it so difficult to maintain their properties, and they would argue government policy in some instances goes against them.
I'm not sure I'd use the word exodus, but yes, landlords are having to make some very difficult decisions. And it's not just in terms of MEES, this minimum energy standard regulations. I mean, there's a lot of reform going on. And we have to face up to the fact that the tax system at the moment does not encourage investment. So if you look at the kind of cumulative effect of not really knowing what the energy efficiency standards are going to look like in a couple of years' time, knowing that we've got renters' rights reforms coming down the line, which is going to change the way that landlords work on a day-to-day basis. And actually, from about 2015 onwards, the tax system has been far more punitive when it comes to taxing landlords' income. Lots of landlords are looking at their investment. You know, by definition, they have a certain amount of money to invest. And they're looking at alternatives. They're looking to see if they can get a better return elsewhere.
Lastly, how tough is it to be landlord at this time?
It's pretty tough. I mean, landlords are doing a really, really important job. You know, by and large, we're providing, you know, high quality accommodation for people who really, really need it, and demand is incredibly high. But it is difficult to plan that investment when you don't really know what the regulatory regime looks like in 12 months' time, or when you know, quite frankly, you are going to have to spend a significant amount of money just to be allowed to carry on letting your property.
Thanks for your time. Chris Norris is Campaigns and Policy Director at the National Residential Landlords Association. If you are a landlord, I've been listening to Norris, just running through some of the figures there. So you're looking at around £20,000 for, say, a Victorian semi. That's just for this. You hate to hear the word cladding, don't you? My goodness, but hopefully it's far safer now. Then you might move towards a heat pump. Well, I think that's probably an easy another five, isn't it? Ten. So that's £35,000 that you might have to add to get your grading down from an E to a C. If you're a landlord, you'll want to talk about that. But we're talking congestion. Simon's in Langdon Hills. Simon, you're on the radio. It's going up, it would appear, by 20%. Your reaction to that? Good morning.
Morning. I just can't believe it. I don't think how much money you throw at knocking people with the price coming to London is going to change anything. You could make it £50. It's not going to make no difference. No. People are still going to have to come into London. I think my main issue really is I drove around London in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and it was a pleasure to drive around now.
Yep.
You go along the Lower Thames Street, the embankment, you don't see a cyclist in the cycle lane.
Nope.
And everyone's backed up. And yep. It's just got people mad. And you're letting out fumes all over the place.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure where you are. I mean, Langdon Hills is in Essex, but if ever you use the A13 to get out of London... is just one of the most horrific exits in the whole of London, I would suggest, that road now.
Unbelievable. If I pick it up at Stamford Lee Oak in Essex and come through Beckton into London, come to the highway, I'm just coming to a halt, everyone's belching out fumes, I just don't get it.
But do you remember, if you go back, I think you and I possibly around the same age, in the 80s and 90s I was coming, there was always traffic, but you would get through there quite quick. You would get up to the East End in fairly good time in the old days.
You'd do it in no time at all. Well, that's when it was the rush hour. But there's no such thing as rush hour now. Complete rush hour.
No, I think you're right. Simon, the line's breaking up, but we got your point. Safe driving. Do you come in every day, matey? Do you have to come in every day?
I only come up there now to have a drink. I come up by train. I love London, as you do. I love it around the Strand, Covent Garden.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Yep.
But you see it, it's just unbelievable. But one of my main gripes, I think, is the cyclists, really. Just walk around there and have a look and see how many stop at a red light. They just don't do it.
No. Well, some, but it is... I do, funnily enough, I do look at that. It is the minority, I have to say, who stop at the red light. It is incredible. Somewhere like Gray's Inn Road, remarkable. Simon, thank you. Don't forget Soho, that's a neat part of London as well. Coming up after the news, it's making the news, this suggestion from senior politician Charlie Now, Lord Faulkner, decriminalisation of the possession of cannabis. You'll hear from the man himself, but not everyone is on board. Peter Reynolds is with the campaigning organisation Clear.
The violent criminal gangs that are selling cannabis no longer have to worry about the fact that their people they're selling it to aren't going to be criminalised. And in fact, it could make the whole situation worse.
We'll have more on that after this. 8:46 LBC News headlines read by Thomas Watts.
The parents of a baby who died aged 15 weeks have told LBC they believe the mould in their home contributed to his death. A driver remains in custody after he was arrested on suspicion of attempted murder at Liverpool's trophy parade. And Thames Water has been fined more than £120 million in Ofwat's largest ever penalty. LBC weather, sunny spells and showers for most places, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M25. There are clockwise queues now at Junction 3 at the M20 because a car's broken down and traffic is being held. Then also there are clockwise queues to Junction 10 at the A3 after an accident, and also clockwise it's slow to Junction 30 at the A13, also after an accident. Very busy on the M4 westbound to Junction 5 at Langley, and that's where a car has broken down. On the trains, London Overground's Windrush line is suspended to and from Highbury and Islington to both West Croydon and Clapham Junction. That's because of an ongoing investigation. No Gatwick Express trains running and Southern Cart run via Peckham Rye. It's all down to a signal failure at East Croydon.
This is LBC.
Have you ever wondered what becoming a lotto millionaire sounds like?
You want to sit down? I can confirm that you have won £1 million indeed.
That's Terry finding out he'd won £1 million.
Yes, oh my God.
Lotto from the National Lottery. Will you be the next millionaire? Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
In the time it takes your nan to tell a story, you could find out if you can claim for a missold PCP agreement. Visit claimsforcars.com. Answer a few easy questions and you'll find out in seconds. If you financed a car between 2007 and 2021 and weren't shown different options or discussed dealer commission, you could have a claim. Claims for Cars is helping people get back thousands on a no-win, no-fee basis. Get the answer in seconds at claimsforcars.com.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
The McSpicy Frank's Red Hot is back. It's the McSpicy, but hotter. With 100% chicken breast fillet, melty cheese, fiery jalapenos, and the irresistible Frank's Red Hot mayo. Danger, danger. Make it hot. Available until the 17th of June. Serve from 11 a.m. Participating restaurants only. Subject to availability.
Find out if you can claim compensation for a missold PCP agreement or a faulty DPF filter. Just visit claimsforcars.com and you'll get the answer in seconds.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 8. We might come back to those changes for landlords in a moment. But is it time to decriminalise the possession of cannabis? Well, a commission that's been set up by the London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, and chaired by a very prominent politician, thinks it probably is. The chair is Charlie, now, of course, Lord Faulkner, who's a KC, and joins me now. Thank you for coming on, Lord Faulkner. What level are we talking about? What amount of cannabis is for personal use, would you say? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for having me. Personal use is use only for yourself, and this is an issue that the law has been dealing with for years and years and years, and they're perfectly able to make the distinction between people who've got it for personal use and people who've got it for dealing. Because as you rightly said in your introduction, we're proposing keep it criminal to deal in cannabis, but make it legal to possess cannabis.
Why have you and your colleagues come to this conclusion? What's driven? What is
because
the
law needs a... because the law needs a fundamental reset. This is a very extensive study. We looked at lots and lots of places around the world. We heard from 200 witnesses. It was a really extensive study. And we were very struck by the fact that the law doesn't deter. A lot of people in numbers have real problems from cannabis use, so you don't want to encourage cannabis use and you want to provide proper support for people. But criminalising people who possess it was a disproportionate and unhelpful thing to do. We looked around the world and saw that if you legalised it completely, including dealing, what happened then was you replaced big tobacco with big cannabis. And what big cannabis does, for quite understandable reasons, that's commercial people selling cannabis, is encourage people to take more cannabis or more people to take it. And that's not good. So the compromise that we've come up with is make it criminal to deal and make it legal to have possession. It also has a very significant improving effect on black community police relations.
Is cannabis a gateway drug, Lord Faulkner?
We don't think so. We looked at a lot of evidence in relation to that. It is far and away the most commonly used criminal drug in the UK. Something like 2.5 million people use it in a year of all ages, from well below 18 to up to 60 and beyond. We looked a lot about the evidence of it, and we took the view that it wasn't necessarily a gateway drug. Some people started with cannabis on and went on to harder drugs, but mostly people got there in other ways.
What about the danger of what... I don't use cannabis, but I understand there's something called skunk cannabis, which is some kind of different mix, as it were. Lord Faulkner.
Yeah. Skunk is synthetic cannabis, and our proposals are in relation to natural herbal cannabis. Skunk you find, for example, in prisons a lot and amongst the homeless, and we are not in favour of making possession of that legal. We are only talking about herbal cannabis. Herbal cannabis is by miles the most prevalent that is used both in recreational use but also in medical use, because there are some people who rightly believe, and medical people agree with this, that cannabis can have a very good effect on assuaging symptoms of quite serious illness, particularly illnesses that cause extreme pain.
How am I going to get it? If it's decriminalised, how will I buy it?
Well, that's the compromise that is made. You have to buy it through criminal sources unless you've got a medical...
How will your recommendations work, Lord Faulkner? Because, I can use it for personal use, but the minute I go to someone on Blackheath High Street or Greenwich High Street, I'm breaking the law, am I not?
You're not breaking the law, but the person who's selling it to you is. And that's the same compromise that is made, the Psychoactive Substances Act. It is a compromise that recognises you should not criminalise the users, but you should not make the sale of it legal. And yes, you're absolutely right.
How are you going to get it,
Charlie? You have to get it through criminal sources, because it's criminal
to sell it.
Well,
you're encouraging criminal behaviour, then.
I'm not encouraging criminal behaviour, because the current position, Nick, is that so many people get it now so easily that it is extremely unlikely to have an impact on the actual amount that people use. But you're absolutely right to identify that. But if the choice is between giving very large corporations the right to sell it legally and, on the other hand, recognise that it will still be sold on a criminal market, we have chosen the second because we believe that will produce the least societal harms.
To allow the criminal markets to continue will provide the least societal harms. To allow the criminal markets to
continue. Exactly.
Why not regulate it through... Faulkner Drugs Incorporated or Ferrari Drugs Incorporated. Why not do it in that fashion, Lord Faulkner?
For two reasons. Evidence from all over the world indicated that if you regulated it and made it legal, you would still have a criminal market. Everywhere in the world, or practically everywhere in the world, where it is regulated, there is still a thriving criminal market. So it doesn't get rid of that problem. And secondly, you've got the problem I already identified, is that you give some big corporations a real commercial motive for making more people use it and people to use it more.
Figures seem to indicate cannabis usage is declining. Have you had sight of those figures, Lord Faulkner?
Yes, we have. It's gone down slightly in relation to it, but it is still very extensive. As I said, the number of people who used it in Britain in the last 12 months, the last recorded 12 months, is probably about 2.5 million.
Are you disappointed the government seem not to be enamoured of your recommendations? There's a statement come out from the Home Office. The government has no intention of reclassifying cannabis from a Class B substance under the Misuse of Drugs Act. Lord Faulkner.
Well, I'm sure that's their current position, but I am sure, Nick, when they read the report, they will change their mind. I think you will find that as far as people who think about this issue, and that's people who are dealing with the problems, as it were, in real life, and looking at how the law works, will think, well, this is the right solution. And I'm absolutely sure, after a moment or two of reflection, the government will come to the same conclusion.
So what is it in the report, you think? What is the silver bullet that's going to suddenly, possibly, turn government policy on its head?
The fact that so much money is wasted on enforcing the current law, the fact that the current law sours relations between the black community and the police, because stop and search on the basis of the smell of cannabis is the most commonly used basis for stopping people. The evidence is absolutely overwhelming in London that the people who are stopped and searched most are people from the black community, in particular young men, and yet there is absolutely no evidence that the black community uses cannabis more than anybody else. All over the world, including in the UK, cannabis is used by every ethnic group. If you took away that as a main reason for stopping and searching, you would improve community relations. So why pursue a law that doesn't deter, that costs a lot of money to arrest people for possession and sours community relations? And I'm not remotely surprised the government's response, because we only produced it last night, the report, is to say we've got no plans at the moment. But I earnestly ask them to look and see whether, as a practical and progressive measure, the change could make a real difference.
Well, you know Sir Keir better than most. You served as his shadow attorney general. Do you sense he's open to a conversation about this?
My experience of the Prime Minister is that he goes on the basis of the evidence. I mean, I'm absolutely sure he's not focused on this report at all, but as a man who looks at the evidence and makes a judgment, the right conclusion is the conclusion that we've reached. So, and he is an open-minded, decent guy who will see the benefits of doing what we're suggesting.
What would be the next step? Presumably it's parliamentary process, is it?
It's a very straightforward parliamentary process. All you need is a statutory instrument that takes cannabis out of the Misuse of Drugs Act. The effect of that is that it would automatically fall within something called the Psychoactive Substances Act. And the Psychoactive Substances Act, which is for legal highs, as they're called, does what I've suggested, makes possession legal, but still criminalises dealing. So all the government needs to do to give effect to the central proposal that we are making in our report is produce a statutory instrument. And they could do that. I mean, I said they could do it tomorrow. It might take 2 to 3 weeks to do, but it's very easily done. And I'm sure, Nick, that people who read the report will think that is the right course.
We're not missing a trick here, are we, Charlie, in that if it was to be made for sale, legitimate for sale through government purposes, there's actually money that could be raised here.
That was the thing we considered. There's money that could be raised. You could make a lot of money in relation to tax. But the consequence of that would be you would have this big cannabis organisations encouraging people to use cannabis. Our evidence was 90% of the 2.5 million people who used it have no adverse effects, but 10% do have adverse effects. Psychotic effects, psychiatric effects, that's a large number.
Why are you making it easier to get, Charlie? If 10% do have, 10% of 2.5 million is quite a lot of people. Why are you making it easier for them?
Because we take the view that although there might be an increase to start with, it would probably go down to the level that it is at the moment. It wouldn't, in the long run, have an effect on a significant increase.
All right. Lastly, I've never used it. Do you use it?
I do not use it, but to be quite frank, I have used it in the past, but I'm 73, so it's a very long time ago.
And what was the effect it had? It's just a relaxant, is it?
Yes, it was entirely favourable, is my recollection.
Always good talking to you, Charlie. Thank you. Lord Faulkner Casey, Chair of the Independent London Drugs Commission. And that is the aspect and the conversation we'll be taking on. It is 9 o'clock, so let's get the LBC News headlines now.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the head of the Metropolitan Police has told LBC that ministers have been silent on the effect of prison reforms on policing. Sir Mark Rowley has warned plans to release more inmates early will lead to more crime.
Government's got a difficult problem to fix with sentencing policy historically and prison building haven't been lined up, so they've got to deal with that. But if we're going to now deal with offenders on the streets who would previously have been in prison, however good a job probation do with the extra money they've got, some of those offenders are going to commit more crime and more trouble locally. That work's going to wash back onto policing, and we need the resources to deal with that.
Some inmates could be released after a third of their sentence.